You're listening to Living Lab Radio. I'm Heather Goldstone. Congress will have a lot more scientists in its ranks when it reconvenes. Several candidates with science backgrounds won their races this past week. The exact number depends on just how you define a science background. But the real question is what impact these science-savvy representatives might have. In at least one case, it could be big, with a registered nurse taking over the helm of the House Science Committee from Lamar Smith. Joining me now with more on all this is Jeffrey Mervis. He covers U.S. science policy for the journal Science. Jeffrey, good to have you back on the show.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with that tricky question of how you define a candidate with a science background. We had been tracking a number of candidates. We've spoken with 314 Action, a group trying to promote candidates with science backgrounds. I know at Science, you guys have also been tracking this issue. So what are your numbers in terms of who ran and how many won?
Sure. No, that's an important question. And the reason it's important is because the word scientist has gotten politicized in a way that it never was before. And in fact, that's part of the reason why you're seeing a surge of interest and an increase in the number of candidates for Congress. But to get to your question, so what we did was we went through all of the databases that other people had compiled, which were probably grossly overestimating the number of people who they labeled scientists. And we were looking for people with a technical background, scientific, technical, or medical, who also presented themselves as a STEM candidate, STEM being an acronym for science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. And we came up with almost 50.
Wow.
Compared to some groups that came up with a list of over 100, and then some that were a much narrower list.
And given that if we were to look in the ranks of Congress prior to these midterms, the number of people in Congress with a science, technology, engineering, math, or medicine background has pretty much been in the single digits, right?
Well, again, that gets to the definition. There are actually 16 MDs, medical doctors, in Congress. All but two of them are Republicans. And the reason I mention that is they don't tout their scientific and medical training by and large. So that's important to keep in mind. The other thing to keep in mind is most people that run for Congress lose, regardless of whether you're a scientist or a ditch digger, or whatever gender, whatever race.
I guess I was going to say it should be 50-50, but if you take into account the primaries as well as the final elections, then yes, most people end up losing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. For example, of that 49, only 19 made it past the primary.
So 50-plus initial candidates, 19 who made it to these midterm elections this past week. Of those 19, how many won? How did they fare?
Right. So 7 of them actually won.
That's not a bad record, right? I mean, a lot of them were first-time candidates as well.
Right. Now, that gets into the other important issue, which is what are the factors that go into deciding who wins? You'd like to think that it was the quality of the person and their training and their campaign that they ran. And sometimes that's true, but sometimes it matters much less than other factors. The biggest of which is, are you running against an incumbent? Incumbents have a huge advantage. The second large factor is, how red or blue is your district? You can be the best candidate in the world, but if you're the other color party, and you're running against an incumbent, you have practically no chance of winning.
Right. And what you haven't said outright here is that the vast majority of these STEM candidates is that most of them overwhelmingly were Democrats.
Correct. I think we only identified 2 out of that whole initial pool. And in fact, there was a third person who several organizations listed as a candidate, and I interviewed him. He was actually a professor out on the West Coast, and he said, oh no, I'm not running this year. I ran 2 years ago.
Right.
But yes, they were almost all Democrats, and again, that's not surprising in this political environment, that science has become equated with climate change, with evidence-based policy, and with largely the Democratic Party.
Well, Jeffrey Mervis, you cover U.S. science policy, the things that these new representatives and one new senator are going to be doing. What are you expecting in terms of the actual impact of having more scientists or people who are really interested in putting science and technology front and center? What could their impact in Congress be?
Well, you're right. I mean, that is the key question. And I've talked to a couple of them and hope to talk to a few more. One thing to keep in mind is once you're elected, you represent that district. And so that means regardless of their background, if their district has large military presence, they're going to want to be on the Armed Forces Committee. If their district has a large, you know, medical presence, they're going to want to be on a committee that is involved in healthcare. It doesn't mean that they're going to abandon their background as a STEM-trained person, but it means that they're more likely to be active in committees that oversee those areas. But I think it's clear that even in that case, they will come to the table and say, look, I'm an engineer. I'm trained to look at evidence, to look at the facts. I can then overlay my political ideology, but at least I'll start with an appreciation for the facts and an understanding of the technical issues that underlie whatever the policy is.
So one committee that's gotten a lot of attention is Eddie Bernice Johnson. She'll be taking the position of Representative Lamar Smith, it's expected, as chair of the House Science Committee. She made a statement after the election that that should be a place where science is respected and recognized as a crucial input to good policymaking, kind of what you were just saying. And that seems like it would go without saying for the House Science Committee, but that hasn't necessarily been the case for the past several years. How much of a difference could that make in switching who's at the helm of that committee?
Right. No, that's a key question and something the scientific community is going to be looking closely at. Yes, Eddie Bernice Johnson is trained as a psychiatric nurse. She served for, I think, 16 years in the Veterans Administration. But that was quite a while ago. She went into politics in the 1970s and then came to Congress in the early 1990s. So she's been in Washington for a long time and has a long track record. I think most of the people in the scientific community feel that she has spoken up for the importance of looking at issues scientifically. And traditionally, that's the role that the science committee played. They're an authorizing committee, and by that I mean they don't have control over spending, but they can look at issues and they can recommend spending levels for agencies under their jurisdiction. I should say the Science Committee has jurisdiction over several important science agencies, NASA being one, the National Science Foundation being one, the science program at the Department of Energy, and the overall White House Office of Science and Technology Policy. So they are in a position to be very visible.
Right. And one of the things that's been very visible in the House Science Committee in the past several years under Lamar Smith has been a very hostile attitude toward mainstream climate science and climate scientists, for that matter. Sounds like that's definitely going to change.
Right. Yeah. I think what most of the scientific community objected to in how Chairman Smith ran the committee was that there seemed to be a presumption that we already know what we think and we're going to try to find evidence to support it. So you would have hearing after hearing in which there would be three members that were chosen by the majority party, the Republicans, who would support the chairman's view on X, whether it's climate change or energy more broadly or some other issue. And then you have one witness, because the minority is generally allowed one witness, who will sort of speak in opposition. You can imagine that didn't lead to a lot of introspection and a lot of new knowledge produced.
It led to a couple of late-night TV comedy moments.
Exactly. You would have, you know, comments about rocks falling off of cliffs, raising sea levels, and they would get on the news, and everyone would chuckle. but it didn't change anyone's mind. So I think scientists would like to see a more reasoned discussion. Realistically, politically, however, I don't think there's much likelihood that anything the science community does is going to have any effect on U.S. climate policy, for the simple fact that President Trump is still in the White House, not to mention, you know, the Senate has not changed hands.
Given that assessment of the future of climate policy, this next question may be superfluous, but another thing that has gotten attention in the days after the midterm election is the fact that the so-called blue wave, not specifically Democratic STEM candidates, but just Democratic candidates in general, took a number of seats from moderate Republicans, including Carlos Curbelo of Florida, who had actually this summer put forward carbon tax legislation. He was a high-profile member of this bipartisan climate caucus in the House. Has that climate caucus been gutted by this election?
Well, I think it may have taken an even lower profile. I think most people that follow that issue and that caucus don't believe that it was committed to advancing legislation. Some people go as far as to say it was just used as a screen for vulnerable Republicans like Curbelo to be able to present climate change credentials to their district in the hope of winning re-election.
In addition to the candidates who were running, who were putting STEM issues in the forefront, there were a number of STEM-related, largely climate and energy-related ballot questions around the country, and the results were kind of a mixed bag. Is there any message we can take out of this regarding American voters' attitudes towards science and the environment?
Sure. Well, no, that's a good question. This may have been the beginning of scientists running for Congress, but it's certainly not the end. I think what they showed is that someone could run a campaign with bona fide scientific credentials and you integrate that into their campaign. Whether it would be effective, of course, depends on a lot of factors, money, candidate message, and the district itself. But that's a long way of saying I think you have to take the long view.
Jeffrey Mervis covers U.S. science policy for the journal Science. Jeff, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.